K-Mud Podcast presents.
This is the Politically Correct Week in Review. It's been a heck of a week. I was going to come into the studio today. I'm Zooming now because I had an interruption. Real life. This is the thing. Real life imposes itself. There was minding my own business, and one of my old goats decided to kick the bucket, and that means digging a hole, hell or high water. And so I had to go out and do that today. And as you know, anybody who lives on a ridgetop around here knows that you get a couple of feet of good soil with clay, and then all of a sudden you're hitting shale sandstone, and just no avoiding it, picking at rock, boy. Anyway, I just want to give a slight obituary to my star goat. He was a neutered male who his only job initially was to keep his father company, but he was a rock star. He had long black hair at the shoulders and legs and mane and beard that took on a rosy red purple glow in the sun. He had a thick undercoat that got brushed out every spring because he kept all cozy. And he was all black except for a little white on the top and a little like a priest's collar at the throat. And so his name was Zbigniew. But I always thought he was a rock star. And so I imagine he was a hip-hop DJ, and his hip-hop DJ name was Fada Ziggy Biggs. So he represented. So R.I.P. Zbigniew. You're a good fella. He was 15 years old, here ever since he hatched. Okay, with that.
Oh, that's tough. Yeah, yeah. Well, goats get good lives when they got good daddies and mommies. So good for you all.
So I don't know how many people out there. Oh, let me just say, this is a call-in talk show here at K-Mud. So I'm wondering, I've always kind of peripherally noticed CPAC going on, the convention that the Conservative Political Action Committee happens. And it's not really a newsy thing. You kind of have to be a news nerd to notice it. And it's a party of the loyal conservatives. It used to have people like Dick Cheney and the Bushes and so on go. They're not playing anymore. It's turned into a full-on MAGA Trump show. And I was seeing some clips and blips about Musk's performance there, pictures of him with a chainsaw up in the air. And I thought, what happened? And so I went to what had been the live feed from PBS. Say what you will about the media, real journalism is reporting what's happening. And so they had a live feed, and I got to see the Musk show, and I have to say, I was absolutely appalled by the performance. Did you see that at all, Charlie?
A little bit.
I mean, I watched the whole thing out of morbid curiosity in a couple of sessions, and I don't know what Musk thinks he's doing, but he was barely articulate. He appeared to be high on something, if you ask me.
Well, he's a self-confessed ketamine addict.
Yeah, it was very,
I guess that's the beginning of it.
Ketamine-like behavior, and with his dark glasses and his kind of the evil suit that he's, his little half three-quarter jacket and t-shirt and hat and sunglasses and gold chain, and he came out like a rock star slash wrestler, you know, to adulation, and with graphics that looked like it was a TV show. And it was just absurd. He couldn't hold himself together to complete a sentence, really. He had a lot of ums and ahs and, well, that's cool. Yeah, no, it's cool. I am become meme was the first thing he said. Because, you know, it started out as a meme and now it's a real thing. I'm living the dream. It's like a meme. And that's really cool. It's awesome. It's cool. And I thought, oh my God, what the hell is going on?
You know, there was a similar experience of Musk with his son or grandson or some 4-year-old boy.
No, that's his son.
Oval Office with Trump sitting behind his great desk, and Trump or Musk totally stealing the show, and the kid distracting him from it. And then too, he was just utterly inarticulate.
Yeah,
but he was showing off, and I've got to think that part of the resolution of this current constitutional crisis of who's in charge and who has a right to fire everybody anyway will be when Trump gets tired of being upstaged by this goofball.
Yeah, no, he was at the desk looking almost like he was nodding out, watching this go down. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, he's still kind of deferring to him, but I just can't imagine him deferring to somebody who's even more narcissistic and, you know, clamoring for attention than Trump himself. That just seems like a match made in hell, but we will see.
Yeah, well, it seems like some of the White House staff is getting a little tired of this action, too. This chief of staff refused to give him an office in the White House, you know?
Yeah.
Reportedly, he was sleeping on a couch in some office across the street. You know, that's the kind of.
But that's part of his shtick. Whenever he takes a new job, he sleeps there. Yeah. It's how he gets away from all his children, I guess.
So a remarkable thing happened today, the first day of it was the you must be in the office, return to work, no more home working stuff at the, what was it, the. I can't remember which office it was now, but basically people arrived and on all the screens in the building were a thing that said, long live the real king, with an AI generated video of Donald Trump sucking and caressing Musk's toes.
Yes, that was under Bobby Kennedy's administration and the HUD office.
Ah, the HUD, right. Housing and Urban Development, right. So they didn't even know how to get rid of it. They went around, had to manually turn off all the screens to make it go away. There's some surmisation. I mean, it's like, you know, okay, I guess Rebecca Solnit mentioned there's been remarkable little kind of hacking going on like this, you know, to kind of counter the movement and so on. And in my paranoid fantasy mind, I'm thinking, you know, this is exactly the kind of thing that Musk's boys would do, have the ability to do, to get people enraged and nervous and create this thing that, I mean, basically it looks like the policy is to create chaos enough to piss off enough people so that something gives and something has to be done. And then there's more chaos and then we get an emergency and then who knows what happens.
Shock and awe is the official American combat doctrine in war. Shock and awe creates not just chaos, but crisis, and crisis creates opportunity.
Right.
As long as people are knock-kneed and drop-jawed, they won't even notice 90% of what he's doing to them. So it's working so far, and we don't yet see the outlines of successful resistance. I'm sure the first avenue of resistance will be lawfare, but we saw in the last Trump administration, it wasn't nearly as powerful and well organized as he is now, that most of his breaches of ethics and norms and morals aren't against the law enough that he can be nailed to the wall for it. So, this is a genuine historic time.
Yeah.
We have not written the history yet.
There are a lot of legal cases moving forward, and they've been losing them. A majority of those have been, you know, in favor of the litigants, not the government. And it has to do with overreach, you know, that you don't have the authority to do this. You know, you can't.
But it's a mixed bag. And it will all come up to the Supreme Court, which outnumbers the so-called liberals 2-1.
Well, so
that, three of them being Trump's own nominees.
Trying to get rid of the birthright citizenship from the 14th Amendment was denied. And then the appellate court upheld it. You know, if the Supreme Court turns on that one, I mean, if they actually go to the Supreme Court, it's like, I don't think the Supreme Court could take that case. I mean, they'd have to look at it and say, you know what, on the face of it, that's ridiculous. It's constitutional.
Yeah, that's an unimportant case.
It's an important case, but it's the kind of thing that it's another one of those, signifying promises, you know, that he was going to do this and he's going to do that. And
yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's just so and if the Supreme Court has the nerve to turn it down, then he's just ratcheted up the grudge against the government by
the people
who voted against the government.
Right. But he ratcheted it up against the Supreme Court that he hoped would be influenced, which, you know, like firing the Joint Chiefs chair who he installed. I mean, like, what's up with that? I saw a great picture. There was all eight of the Joint Chiefs. And it said, guess which two were fired? And of course, there's one black man and one woman. Eminently qualified people, by the way, for that job. I mean, you know, I mean, what the woman was commanded the Pacific Fleet, you know, a fighter pilot, commanded two aircraft carrier battle groups, you know, I mean, like, okay, she was a woman, so she doesn't belong there, I guess is the idea. So.
Well, he doesn't even justify things. He just does them. He just does them. And Musk is no monk. Musk is no different. When he brags of saving $40 billion a year, it turns out it's more like $40 million. But those savings consist of his just eliminating programs that the president disapproves of, DEI, woke stuff, that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, so that was the what's his name, Brown, see? Q Brown was accused of being woke. And the thing is that he was in a command position where he was instigating the rules and regulations that were put in front of him. He was doing his job.
He was following orders. Mm-hmm.
Following orders, right. And I don't even know where to go with it. I mean, what's going to happen? Well, what's going to happen, Charlie?
All we can do is watch and wait right now. No, these really are historic times, and they are just beginning. So, in fact, in that light, I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about what's happening in Europe.
There are meanwhile.
Also historic adjustments being made right now to Trump's screaming 180 on the Ukraine war.
Right.
Rebutting bromance with Putin. That's very significant stuff. And you would think that it would be reflected in the German elections that took place yesterday for the Bundeswehr, their parliament. But it seems that despite Trump and Musk's best efforts to interfere in the German election, as we all know, no foreign countries can do that to America except Israel. But we do it to all foreign countries with complete impunity. And Trump's shock and awe is equally shameless there as here. You may remember that Vice President Vance insulted the whole German establishment for not embracing the so-called ultra-right AfD party that is basically doubling its vote in every election. So with that background, it turned out that there were no surprises in the final outcome, or no big surprises, because the pollsters in Germany still have an accurate finger on the pulse of the populace. So the first place party was the current opposition, the Christian Democrats. They got 30% of the vote. Second, 20% of the vote was the Alternative for Germany, the AfD, which is supposedly firewalled against government, because they're fascists and Nazis.
Right.
What they actually are is they started out as a libertarian party. Now they're a nationalist party. They've grown in prominence with their strong emphasis on limiting immigration. And as I say, they came in with 20% of the vote. But the significance of the election was that in third place, having lost about 40% of its vote from last time, was the Social Democrats, who had been the governing party, and they've been hooted out of office. And Chancellor Scholz will spend the rest of his life, you know, working in a Burger King or something. But between the disgraced party and the center-right alternative to the disgraced center-left party, they have a bare majority in parliament, so they will be able to construct a government. It'll be tottery, and both of them entirely agree on everything that matters, which is that Trump is evil and Ukraine is godlike and Putin is blah blah and blah blah and blah blah,
It's
and they're
funny.
no more capable of learning anything than our Democrats are. But what's interesting is on the left, there actually is a reconstituting left in Germany. The Greens lost a lot of votes. They went from 18% to 13%. And the Greens had been a very active part of the last coalition government. Their foreign minister and the economics minister were both from the Green Party, and they were both just they were just neoliberal zombies. They just believe everything that that Joe Biden believes. And they will not participate in the next government because a genuine left party created by Sarah Wegenknecht, and it's the party is named after her at this point, barely failed to achieve 5% of the vote, and so they won't have parliamentary representation. If they were in parliament, the new ruling coalition would have to take the Greens in again to create a majority because they didn't quite make it. It's just the two tottering parties that are both useless, and neither of them has said anything meaningful since Angela Merkel left office 5 years ago.
I saw an amusing take on that. It said it's much easier task than it might have been. For hours on Sunday night, it looks likely that Merz would need to add a second center-left partner, the environmentalist Greens. Like, oh my God, they avoided having to need the Greens.
Well, the Greens are even loonier lately. I mean, they still have green values, but even the economic minister doesn't understand the economy of Germany. The economy of Germany was destroyed by our war in Ukraine because people may remember Joe Biden repeatedly threatened to destroy the Nord Stream pipeline of cheap gas from Russia if the Germans dared to complete it, which cost $20 billion and was an essential component of their industrial economy. Well, the Germans still thought they could do it, and they were wrong. Biden blew it up, completely, not completely destroyed. One of the four pipes is still there, and they don't dare turn it on because Biden will just, or whoever will blow that up too. So the Germans lost their cheap energy, and the Greens still insist on shutting down their remaining nuclear reactors. And the Americans said, hey, no problem. We'll sell you liquid natural gas for only six times as much. Just go ahead and spend billions of dollars setting up receiving plants for this stuff that we'll schlep across the ocean for you. And so all this is good for America. All this is devastating for Germany. And all this is not discussed by any respectable German politician. So, in this context, the traditional old left, Die Linke, which kind of has the old Communist Party in Eastern Germany at its core, have turned into a cool nightclub scene in the last 3 months. And it's that old left party, which is now under cool administration of hipsters, was able to attract 8% of the vote. And it's they who prevented the Sarah Wagenknecht alliance from getting their 5%. Wagenknecht came in just behind that. So the long story short is that Germany is still just flubbering around, unable to come to terms with reality. And unfortunately, they are the leaders of European thinking, and the new center-right Chancellor Merck assumes that he will be recreating better European understandings. It's the only thing that the Europeans have come to recognize, thanks to Vance and Musk and their interference in their election, is that the Americans have abandoned them. So what they're going to do after that abandonment will be very interesting to watch. You can tell similar stories about France. You can see that farther east in Europe, the off-brand, dumped on right-wing crazies are coming into government in more and more places, and they're becoming less and less crazy. So it's very interesting, seething times happening in Europe right now. And being American, we're incapable of understanding or contributing to any of it.
So apparently, I have seen that a lot of the AfD gains came from the former East Germany.
That's right. That's their core.
Right. And the winning issue, of course, was racism against immigrants, which resonates with.
Isn't necessarily racist. I mean,
Well,
here in America,
I can see that.
how was Trump able to get so many more Democratic votes in major cities than any Republican has in 50 years? The answer is very simple. So many people in cities that are overwhelmingly Democratic don't understand why recent people, flooding in from all over the world, get hotel rooms and free food and services and assistance in getting jobs, where citizens don't get any of that, and many of them are living in the street. The same complexes are happening in Germany, especially in Eastern Germany, because it's so much poorer.
You think there's a provision for U.S. citizens to apply for asylum? I
There's
mean,
certainly a case to be made.
yeah, I mean, it's like I'm being oppressed, you know, I can't afford rent, you know.
No, it's I mean, what it demonstrates is that the ruling parties have these notions that they act on that are all important, but they don't govern. They aren't acting in the interests of the people that they
Well,
expect to vote for them. They don't know how to. They just go along with the slogans and the schemes that activists bring to them, and they don't have a big picture.
yeah, no, so your analysis has I've seen echoed before about, the lack of that populism is a popular thing because of the lack of representation that
Yeah,
people
it's a necessary thing.
have. Yeah, but the fact is that a true populism means a little follow through. I mean, we get the rhetoric of populism, but the
I
actual
agree.
on the ground is not happening. And
Yeah.
how long
If
is
we
it
had left populism, it might be effective. But of
Yeah,
course, the purpose
yeah.
of the Democratic Party is to emasculate any potential outbreak of left populism, and they're pretty good at it. That's
So
basically all the Democratic Party does well. It prevents left populism from getting any grounding. Ask Bernie Sanders.
right.
So, and the Republicans, as you say,
So,
don't have to deliver; they just have to spout like the Democrats.
from my perspective, I can understand or begin to forgive somebody who voted for Donald Trump based on what he claimed he wanted to do, if you had that in your as your goals, you know. But it's very hard to understand how, given what actually happens, how you could continue that support.
Oh,
I
I
mean,
think it's easy to understand. When people vote for the Democrats and the Democrats don't do anything for them, they vote for the guy who says that he will. If the Democrats delivered, they would get votes. If they don't
yeah,
deliver, they get
okay.
fewer votes in
So,
every election. It's not hard to understand.
well, but what delivery are we getting from the other side? That's the thing. I mean, that's what I mean is that the prices of eggs have gone up. Inflation is on the rise. I mean, things that he claimed the war will be done on day one, all these things. I'm still waiting to see what happens with the wars. I mean, we'll get into that. The notion that it's very difficult to get any admission that actually Russia invaded Ukraine, that is the aggressor there. That he's talking about
Well, now
we need to stop killing.
there are a lot of ways to tell that story, and only one of them makes Russia the aggressor and not the victim of 30 years of
Well, the
NATO
fact
aggression.
is, Russia did not have to go and kill people and destroy cities. That
The
was a
fact
paradox.
is that we didn't have to destroy their government, stage a coup, and unleash Zelensky to attack Russian language citizens of Ukraine, which is
Okay.
why half the country seceded 10 years ago, and we didn't make them secede. Russia didn't either. They did
I
it
think.
immediately because Zelensky was this wild-eyed, wacko nationalist
There's
who
a
was out
fine
to
line.
destroy Russia, which was half of their own people.
There's a fine line there between political, whatever you'd call it, political activism and on the ground to do certain things and actually invading a country with military force. I mean,
I recognize no distinction at all between the coups that we stage by the gross every year all over the world and formal military intervention. We formally militarily intervene when our coups fail.
oh boy. Okay.
No, there's two sides to the story.
Yeah.
And yes, obviously Trump is incapable of telling the truth for two consecutive sentences, so he didn't do a good job of explaining what he was babbling about. But
Right.
it is true that Zelensky ran as a peace candidate. That was what he promised. Then he got some sense slapped into him by the people who staged the coup, and he became a warmonger. And now, poor guy is going to have to
At this
retire with
point,
his couple of billion dollars to Florida like the
I
rest
can't
of the
buy it.
thugs.
He's not a warmonger. He's defending the country from invasion. I mean,
He created the invasion
you
with
don't
his
create invasion,
anti-Russian
invader.
policies. This is exactly what Trump was not managing to talk about. Zelensky didn't have to attack Russian culture. It's half of the country of Ukraine, and he
Attacking
attacked it. He
culture
was
is
out
not.
to, he wouldn't permit schools that taught Russian for for as long as the schools had existed to speak Russian anymore. He tried to make Russian illegal. Of course, half the country rebelled against that. Of course they did.
But is that justify bombing cities and killing
He
civilians?
was already bombing cities. There were at least 8,000 dead civilians in eastern Ukraine from indiscriminate shelling by the Ukrainian army against the seceders. The civil war was already on. Thousands of people were already dead. I'm not justifying anything. I'm saying what happened. And to
Okay.
act as if that doesn't happen because history starts when, our bad guy does something we can accuse him of. That's not history.
Righty. I'm going to put the phone number out again since we're at the bottom of the hour here. 707-923-3911 if you have something to add to this conversation. There
And then
was
there's
something.
gossip.
Yeah, no, yeah, there was something I was going to say about this.
Okay.
Oh, the UN vote today. I think that was today. Interestingly, if now they're calling it the third anniversary of the invasion. Two resolutions were adopted calling for the end of the war, rejecting U.S. draft that never mentioned Moscow's aggression. So instead, both resolutions made clear Russia was the aggressor, in which the U.S. refused to abstain from the vote. But basically, I mean, it doesn't matter. The UN votes that, okay, that's a bad thing. Stop it. Don't go there anymore. But there were some, interestingly, French amendments, and Macron was in Washington today talking with Trump, and they were groping each other's knees. It was kind of amusing. They had little chuckles where they'd put their hands on each other's knees and like, ha, ha, ha. I
Well,
don't
I've
know
wanted
how
them
much.
taken off their shoes. What a great meme
Yeah,
that would have been.
right. But France put in some amendments that were agreed to, but caused the U.S. to abstain. So it's being called a win for Ukraine because of the way the vote went, but it doesn't amount to anything except, there it is, Russia. Basically, the big news is on the first resolution, the U.S. joined Russia in voting against it.
Well, and that kind of tells you what's going to happen with the Ukraine war. The bottom line in Ukraine is Russia has essentially already won the war. It's not officially over, but Germany lost its invasion of Russia 2 years before Russia actually kicked out the last dead German soldier off their territory and marched on Berlin. Russia has won the war. Zelensky is going to go out. Russia is going to get most of what it fought for and asked for peacefully for decades before it decided it was necessary to invade. So that's what's going to happen. And the United States is already preparing the ground for that happening by agreeing with Russia that we have to tell a different story than the one our propagandists have drummed into everyone's heads because so much of it is false. And even if it were true, Russia's won the war, and it's going to get, its pounds of flesh. That's what's going to happen. And Trump
Yeah.
is acknowledging that rather than Biden just pretending it's not happening and letting other people pay for the consequences of a longer, drawn-out, deadlier war.
I wonder if that actually Trump is thinking he's going to be the middleman, that he's going to make this deal to get concessions for minerals and so on, and then be able to sell them to Russia, you know, and say, hey, see, it's a good, everybody wins. We get a little cash, you get a little taste, you know.
Well, that may be more shock and awe for his fans, too. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think, obviously, what Trump wants is to just stop wasting money and blood on a country that Russia is going to take back. But the problem is that, you know, he's not that interested in it. He just wants it to stop. And he's happy to stop it pretty much on Putin's terms, because Putin can name the terms, or he can march on Kiev. But Gaza is a whole different kettle of fish.
I always feel bad when you say call or call back when they've lost connection because their radio's off and so they don't hear you.
Oops.
Yeah.
Well, everyone else knows what they should do.
Yeah, right. You should call back. The irony of it's already down
this
the memory
might be
hole.
Them.
Oh, okay. Caller. Hello, caller.
I'm back.
Okay.
I heard you. I
Good.
Was close enough to the radio to get hear you guys. Say that. Anyways, so back to, I don't know how much you heard, but basically it was a young German who had just joined the AFD, and she said the reason, and this was the sentiment among many of the, you know, growing AFD, you know, ranks, is basically prior to the destruction of Germany's industrial base by increased energy prices stemming from the, you know, the U.S. basically blowing up the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Basically, they've been, you know, seeing immigrants come in, and essentially, I guess that's even before the energy crisis. They were, there was a huge influx of immigrants who were basically displacing Germans from the workplace, a cheaper wages, cost cutting. It all boils down to economics and business. And I think that's essentially what's driving the issues in Europe as well as domestically has been this. I think it's the same kind of international banking cartels, which has influenced and manipulated all these different countries' economies, which permeates right into politics. So they've gotten a lot closer in many ways to our politics. But mainly, it's not racism. It's being displaced by low-wage, cheap, immigrant labor that causes that resentment. That's one thing. And the other thing is, I was watching, I know here I'm ranting, but Ron Paul, who I typically respect for his independence, he seems happy with what Elon Musk and Trump are doing in terms of like the audits and trying to basically make, change the I don't know if you could say the dollar, but basically getting to the problem of our country, which is the economy, basically, and based on a deficit based dollar. Now I'll be quiet.
Okay.
Yeah. I entirely agree with most all of your observations, and it's really a very good point. And in that light, I just want to throw out very quickly that the incoming German chancellor from the center-right party, Merz, was formerly the head of BlackRock's operations in Germany. BlackRock is the enormous financial manager in the U.S. with trillions of dollars in assets. And before that, he worked for Goldman Sachs. So to your point that the Germans are becoming more and more American all the time, yeah, you betcha.
And, yeah.
One world government. I'll get off the air so someone else can call in, but thanks. Loving the discussion. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Yeah, and how about that Fort Knox? Everybody can get their piece of gold or what?
That will be interesting.
Yeah.
If people don't understand, the reason we're talking about Fort Knox, and some people don't know if there's any gold left in there, is that that gold has been leased to speculators just as a way of making money. You basically rent quantities of gold to people who sell futures on that value. And 99% of the futures that are bought and sold aren't delivered. People are just speculating on the value going up and down before the due date. So ordinarily, it doesn't cost you any gold to make a little more money, you know, selling rights to temporary ownership of it. But now, I don't know, probably most people are aware by now, the value of gold is skyrocketing. And yeah. The cheapest way to get hold of physical gold is to buy a futures contract at a price that's just slightly above the price of gold today. And when that contract comes due, you demand that the gold be delivered, and you've by then bought it at a discount to the current market rate of it. That's what's happening. That's why we're flying in literal tons of gold every day from London especially, but also other European countries, to New York, where the futures markets are well established. And they have to schlep that gold in by the ton every day on commercial aircraft, because people are taking delivery, and people want to know what kind of deliveries have been taken from Fort Knox, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of gold, apparently. I mean, what is gold's approaching $3,000 an ounce?
That's
now?
Right. Yeah. It'll hit $3,000 any day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was at $1,800, year and a half ago.
Right. So apparently that accounts for like 56% of the gold reserves is in Fort Knox, 147 million troy ounces. A lot of gold. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's since the dollar was decoupled from gold. I mean, it's, and then it became a thing for speculation. Yeah, it's.
Well, you know, every speculation is ultimately bottomed on fears of the future. And hopes for the future. So speculation, yes, is just this infinite gurgitation of wild guesses. But the reason gold is skyrocketing in value is because the American dollar is no longer trustworthy. And central banks around the world that have used the dollar, or rather dollar banknotes, treasury notes, and just rolling them over for decades after decades, people are no longer as confident that the dollar will always be worth much money. And so right. Central banks have been hoarding gold instead of dollars for the first time since World War II. Well, no, that's not true. De Gaulle started doing it in the 60s. That's why we went off the gold standard, because De Gaulle was taking advantage of our gold standard to buy cheap gold. So we stopped selling it at all. But, you know, the reason it's going up in value is that not just speculators, but also sober bankers recognize that gold is worth more than dollars in the near future, possibly.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
And we have a call.
We got a couple of callers. Yeah, and we should talk about the sovereign wealth fund that Trump wants to establish. Hello, caller.
Hi.
Welcome. You're on.
Hey, you remember that movie, The Producers? I forget the name of the guys who did it, but basically it's about the a couple guys who put in, doing a theater, and they figured out they can make more money if the play loses money, so they tried to create the worst musical they could. It's the one where they had some transvestite singing Springtime with Hitler. That seems kind of like what Trump was doing a couple weeks ago. He's put on some tariffs. It was obviously going to crash the market, and a bunch of people bet the market was going to crash, and it did, and they must have made a fortune. And then he reversed it, and so then the market goes back up again. It seems like that's just what we're in for now. Trump's going to crash the market so he and his friends can bet on it, and it's just going to be like that for a while. Anyway, thanks. I really appreciate your covering a lot of the news stuff, because I'm not getting enough. Thank you.
Good. Thanks. And in fact, to your point, Trump was speculating in meme stocks,
meme coins.
Meme coins. Yes, thanks. That these are just symbols of art that have no physical existence. They're just There's memes.
The notion that there may have been some insider trading on that, because when he
what we know for stone cold certain is Trump got elected and he had just issued all these memes, and because now he was president, the value of the Trump memes skyrocketed. After they skyrocketed, he sold his. He made a ton of money. That crashed the market and the prices collapsed. His wife Melania got in on the business. She started her own memes. They too blew up in price. She sold them. They crashed. The Trumps, and just on the processing of these values, the Trumpsters made $100 million, plus all of the speculative action. And, you know, to the previous caller's prediction, they know how to do it. They proved it in the first week of his election.
Yeah, making money out of thin air, yeah. Yeah, yep. We got another caller waiting there. Hey, caller.
Yes, I just want to preface that I have some skin in the game, and I disagree that Zelensky is the bad guy who attacked the Russians and deserved in return Russian tanks rolling into Ukraine. And also, I believe other European countries are really frightened that when Putin gets Ukraine back, which he will, I agree with that, Charlie, that they will be next for the taking. And so my question is it true that Putin represents the will of the Russian people?
There is that to consider, because, I mean, you know, it's easy to say Putin's a dictator, but the fact is that he is a ruthless, no matter what you would call him. His history has been ruthless and not necessarily... how do you say it? I don't want to say honest, but honorable, you know.
All that can be said, but what has to be acknowledged, I think, if we're going to have a serious discussion, is that he's the most successful and popular head of state on the European continent. Now, he's been at it for 25 years, and he has eliminated the opposition. He's no more a Democrat than Zelensky, obviously. But he is serving the people well. He's popular because he has restored the economy that America's great ideas in the 90s destroyed. That's very important. And one of the ways that he has built up this general appreciation, even though, of course, there are dissidents, and of course, there are, you know, it's not a democracy. Bad things
happen.
It's
dangerous to be a dissident in Russia.
It's dangerous to be a dissident anywhere in Europe, in case you haven't noticed. It's Germany didn't permit the official UN reporter who went to Gaza to tell the UN the status of things. They didn't permit her to make a speech in Germany because they said it was anti-Semitic. It was anti-Semitic because it wasn't praising Israel. It was describing genocide. So it was illegal for the UN's high representative to speak in public in Germany. That's not even dissidence. That's just news. And it's illegal. So, you know, that's the bigger picture that we're operating in, and that's why politicians generally are so unpopular. But your question had two parts. Is Putin really determined to march across Europe and invade London? That's one question. And is he representing the will of the Russian people? That's a separate question. I think he is representing the Russian people very well by being conservative, by reestablishing the authority of the church, by standing up for traditional values, just like Orban and other Eastern European leaders are rejecting the whole woke thing. But more generally, standing up for traditional values and identities against the capitalist assertion that we're all individuals and all that historic slop no longer has meaning. I think Putin very popularly embodies a will for people to know who they are and where they come from. And, you know, he's good at it. Now, does he want to invade the rest of Europe? No. We've been saying that about Russia for, you know, ever since we managed to stop them at Berlin because Stalin kept his word after winning World War II. he has nothing to gain from taking over declining countries. What he has to gain is making peace with China and India and trading with the growing parts of the world, the economies of the future. And that's what he's doing. Why on earth would he want to be saddled with Europe any more than Trump wants to be saddled with Europe? We don't want Europe. Why would Putin want it?
Well, not necessarily Western Europe.
Why are the Lithuanians in the polls, the leaders of their government, sounding like...
Well, that's a different question. Yeah.
Okay.
They managed to escape from the Russian Empire, and then they were swallowed up again by the Soviet Union, and they managed to get out from under that, and they're terrified that they will be swallowed up again. That's understandable. Poland has the same issues.
Yeah, no, former Soviet states, of course, are the worried ones, and what happens if those former Soviet states become Russian adjacent, then that pushes that line that the Western Europeans have always worried about. So, something's happening there. I mean, I thought it was really ironic that J.D. Vance was in Munich talking stuff, putting down the Europeans. For a generation now, the term Munich, when you refer to Munich, it refers to the
appeasement
concept
of
appeasement. Yeah, the Nazis, that everybody in Europe believed this was going to be a good thing, that we will, oh yes, you can have a little bit of Czechoslovakia. We overreached there after World War I. Maybe that should be part of Germany after all. And that'll be fine. Hitler will be satisfied and, well, it didn't really come down that way. And of course, Stalin was nervous after that, and kind of allied with Hitler briefly to say, hey, let's be cool. That didn't work well either.
Hitler and Stalin were both buying time. They both knew they were going to attack each other.
Yes,
they just wanted to buy time, and they did.
Yes,
excuse me, go ahead.
Just as an aside, I wanted to bring in something totally different. Jane Fonda said in her speech on her recent award, the Screen Actors Award, that we old people are not too old to protest, and I just wanted to bring Jane up and thank you for this. As I said, thank you all of you for the interesting discussion, and I hope you get in one or two more callers.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
We got them lined up, yeah. Okay, caller next.
Hey, welcome.
Yeah, hello, is that me?
Yep, you got it.
Hey, all right, welcome. I just turned on my radio, heard this chat, and we don't hear too much about the Ukraine happenings these days. Everything's pivoting, our crazy news scene, but one thing that's been really interesting to me the past couple of years with the Ukraine thing is that area is notoriously a serious agricultural region. And no matter what's going on with the economies, Russia has, as far as I know, and the stuff I've been researching, Russia has declared to try and create the world's largest organic agricultural base. They understand the threats and the issues and the possible bad things that could happen with conventional farming, especially GMOs. And as far as I know, GMOs aren't even allowed in Russia, and they're committed to a strictly agricultural farming base, just trying to get back to basics. And the Ukraine takeover to me has always shown wherever America goes or American forces, there's the Monsanto, there's the Bayer, there's the whole GMO influx. And so from my perspective, it's a lot about agriculture and food. And I just like our local people here to maybe dip into that. If you don't believe me, try to do some research yourself. I know it's harder and harder to find the truth these days. But if you go back far enough and look into it, Russia has really declared that they're not into GMOs at all. They want to bring real food to people. No matter what the economic systems are or what the government systems are. So when you look at these battles and realize they might just be tilted on agricultural warfare where Monsanto's going in there and they're backed by the strength of armed forces to grow up GMO crops and spray them with, Roundup or whatever the hell is going on these days. It's pretty common in a lot of countries. We saw it back in United Fruit. It's been decades and decades. And I barely hear anything on the news anywhere about Russia's intent to go pure, non-GMO, all-organic farming. Could you imagine if Trump just declared, what if he came into Humboldt and told all our farmers to shut down, no more organic food? So that's just food for thought. Look into it. And no pun intended. Thank you very much for your show.
Okay. Thanks. I wonder. I mean, I think some Europeans, other European countries, are probably of the same mind.
The EU bans GMO too, and we've been trying to break that down ever since they put it up more than 10 years ago. We hate it.
Right. And we got another caller at less than 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Hello, caller.
Good evening.
And to you.
Yes. Against the Orwellian curve, we're having a free discussion.
So far.
I just want to remind our listeners that as we descend into Animal Farm, where four legs are better than two, which I think is overlooked, as Orwell's treatise on the diminution of human experience, that he even used animals to equate how low we became, the drunken farmer. Reflecting on a couple of thoughts, as far as the Ukraine and being the breadbasket of Europe, much like the Central Valley is the breadbasket of the former United States of America, Kellogg has already bought land there through the Blackstone Group, negotiated by the State Department. They're going to take that grain. They're going to take that grain. And when you walk down that aisle, it's full of nothing but boxes of cereal. And they've all got different labels, but they all contain the same processed garbage. Grains, in fact, are a negative for human consumption, as well as cattle. Cattle are better off grass-fed. We know this because of the resultant effects of how natural grazing affects their own physical infrastructure, the lipozenes, all the benefits that come to being a healthy cow, and reducing what is not nominally but largely a form of methane gas, which is when cattle are fed artificially, like human beings with grain, they have a lot of flatulence, which brings us back to felon number 34. Apparently, wears a diaper. I mean, when did you ever think you'd see a president that wore a diaper? And it speaks to his lack of self-control. I'm not going to diminish somebody for having a health issue, but it's his diet.
His diet is not very not a good
horrible,
one.
Horrible diet.
Yeah.
And when you eat poison, what do you speak? You speak poison. Here in Mendocino County, my time is probably really limited. We were the first county in the state of California to fight against the GMO effect. And we won in spite of a $9.72 pledge against every dollar that we committed in our campaign. And then immediately, in spite of a Democrat-controlled state legislature, GMO bans were banned county to county in the state. But we have it here in Mendo.
I'm a Mendocino County voter myself. And, we are getting to the top of the hour here. I find it really interesting that the original move against GMOs was based on a precautionary principle of avoiding pollinating wild plants and contamination and so on. And it seems there's been a successful campaign by the proponents of GMOs to prove that there are no specific health concerns from GMO crops. And I have to agree, most of those things, I mean, you might get more Roundup on your product if on a Roundup ready plant, or they use Roundup to kill wheat, actually. So you're getting it, you know, before harvest, you're going to get it that way anyway. But it seems like the arguments or the defense of GMOs is that, well, it's not a health problem. It's not a problem for health for humans. And it seems very persuasive because actually there is no specific evidence that GMO crops are damaging to human health. But that was never the original issue, especially during the campaign for that initiative in Mendocino County. It was more about contaminating other crops and the insect life that depends on those crops and or the plants that are pollinating and having a kind of an unknown contaminant with unknown consequences entering the environment with no controls. And that was really, it was more environmental and wider ecology-based fears and precautions-based than actual human health. In the end, human health is, you're down in the Diet Cokes all the day like the president does. He doesn't care about human health.
And they were right about the environmental consequences.
Yeah.
Roundup is terrible for adjoining wildlife. Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah. Well, we made it to the top of the hour again. Just about. And I did mention the Greenpeace is being hit with a slap suit by the oil pipeline company that blames Greenpeace for organizing the
Indian protests up in the Dakotas.
Yeah,
the pipeline in the last administration.
Yeah, I mean it's as slap suits do. You know, strategic. What's the acronym there?
Let's see. Strategic lawsuit against public participation.
Right. Yeah. So it sets a precedent. It basically the free speech was being exercised, and if the slap suit, Greenpeace loses that suit, that'll be evidence that these sorts of things shouldn't happen, and you can be, it's not a good thing. As we know,
you don't even have to win the slap suit. You ruin people's lives by suing them with all the resources of a mighty corporation. And, that's right. Why California has laws against it, not that they work.
So in Greenpeace's case, they were not the main organizer of those protests. So there's just a convenient nonprofit organization to target.
Right.
And there we have it. Top of the
Another
hour.
Week down.
We'll be around next time in a couple of weeks. And Facebook page, Politically Correct Week in Review, will be updated with some things. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.